The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off a little different than usual because we're going to backstep here. Last week, I did not do the introduction for the May issue because we were running a little ahead. So let's do the Dear Reader. This is from the editor. For me, change is in the air. The snow is thawing in the town where Susan and I are living. We both got vaccinated. I've never been so happy to have a type 1 diabetes, which qualified me for early shots. By the time you read this, our daughter will have been married, surrounded by family on a Mexican beach. Hoya! The spirit of change and joy has struck RD, too. In this issue, you find new sections meant to delight you as much as tossing right at your grinning daughter. A lot. A knowledge quiz. Sharpen your pencils. Brain Games now features fact or fiction. To test your recall and worldliness in equal measure, I scored 6 and got the bonus question only by cheating and consulting 13 things. May you do better. We do some of those, but some of those are meant to be handwritten, so we really don't do all of them. A new health section. You already know R&D's sister site, thehealthy.com. Now we're curating its content into The Healthy, full of advice, first-person narratives, and medical news. Where oh where? There's nothing like seeing a gorgeous photograph. Well, unfortunately, some of you cannot. Shot taken somewhere in America and wanting no needing to know where the heck it was taken. We turned an irresistible temptation into a visual quiz. A lot of these things are unfortunately not wonderful for visually impaired people, but we'll keep going. Smile-inducing news. R&D editors here and around the world are always finding never-before-seen examples of charity and ingenuity. We're rolling into a world of good. Animal stories, because who can resist? To continue the celebration of our animals' ability to bond, Best Pet Pals will spotlight one prize of submission in our contest. Finally, we're reducing R&D's new tagline, A Trusted Friend in a Complicated World. As always, we hope to be that friend who brings fun ideas to your kitchen table, who helps everyone laugh and cry together about makes us all human. Write to let me know whether our new bits get us nearer the goal. And thanks for reading. Bruce Kelly, Editor-in-Chief. Write to me at letters@rd.com. Actually, don't write to me, write to him. And the letters. This is from the March issue. These are letters concerning the March issue. Does this dog know whether you have cancer? My mother was playing bridge at a friend's house. She never liked going there because of a less-than-friendly chihuahua. On this particular day, the dog was sniffing all the ladies. When it came to my mother, it bit her on the calf. The bite was so severe that she had to go see a doctor, who discovered the dog had bitten a mole on my mother's leg that turned out to be melanoma. My mom might not have admitted it, but that little dog saved her life. Judy Starkweather, Hendersonville, North Carolina. 10-minute life fixes. I've never written to a magazine, but at age 83, I had to let you know that I've been battling the charred bottom of my favorite pot and was about to give up. I've gone through so many of this will do it fixes, but boiling a dishwasher tablet in the pot is one that finally worked. I'm so grateful for this small paragraph in your magazine. Pal Iliff in Forest, West Virginia. Your method to convert Celsius to Fahrenheit will give a rough conversion. Go one step further if you really want accuracy. After doubling the Celsius temperature and adding 30, count the number of tens above or below 50 in the result, and respectively subtract or add that number to find the Fahrenheit equivalent. So, 0 degrees centigrade times 2 plus 30 equals 30. 30 plus 2 equals 32 degrees Fahrenheit, or 100 degrees centigrade times 2 plus 30 equals 230. 230 minus 18 equals 212 Fahrenheit. With practice, you'll convert in your head faster than the display at the bank can. David Miller, San Jose, California. At my age, I don't think I'm going to worry about that. Rules for being the age you are. There are no rules for being a certain age. In my 50s, I learned to ride a horse, took up swimming, and raced up the hills of Rio de Janeiro on a motorcycle. In my 60s, I needed a deck, so I Googled how to build one. There are no playbooks to follow. Jump right in and keep swimming. And if you don't know how, learn. Annette Thomas, Clarkston, Michigan. Everyday Heroes. The story about lighting the runway with car headlights for an emergency landing was read with a smile. We lived in a remote fly-in community in Alberta where a girl broke her leg setting one day. That night, a local storekeeper and I ran down to the town's lake ice runway to light tuna cans with wicks stuck in them, our makeshift signal lights for the emergency plane coming to pick her up. Mark Hoefley, Richardson, Texas. News from the world of medicine. Weighted blankets help with insomnia, but be careful if you have a small pet. A woman, she's two, snuggled under one of those and almost suffocated because it was too heavy for the doll to get out on its own. Cindy Wilworth, Hudson, Indiana. Brain games. One of your this, not that, riddles states that Marianne only likes French things. It's odd that she would like French fries, which are actually from Belgium. EKVRD.com. From the comfort of their jail cells. I'm not tech savvy, but out reading this article, I thought, instead of trying to stop cell phones from entering the prison system, isn't there a way to block cell service altogether? Well, all we can do with technology stopping people already behind bars from laundering millions of dollars should be kind of a no-brainer. Kayleen Dillon, Suffolk, Virginia. Pistachio problems. My mother would often grade assignments while eating pistachios, leaving red fingerprints on the paper. When her fifth graders figured out what created the marks, they would bring her pistachios instead of apples. Peter Gibo, Bloomington, California. Years ago, I read an RD story about a lady whose car wouldn't start again if she stopped for pistachio ice cream. Chocolate and vanilla were no problem. It turned out that those popular flavors were prepackaged, but pistachio was scooped in demand, and it took so long that the car wouldn't start after waiting in the Texas midday heat. Allison Dolan, in Peabody, Massachusetts. Can a magazine become a family heirloom? As Reader's Digest approaches its 100th birthday in 2022, we're looking to hear from folks whom our day is something of a hand-me-down. Passed along from parents or grandparents, is that you? Do you think you might know the magazine's oldest or youngest living survivor? If R&D has been special to you and yours since, well, forever, go to rd.com/familyties to share your story and see terms. Everyday Heroes. Marla Zwinging with the first person she helped, her dad, David Gomicki. And there's a picture of a young woman with a gentleman who looks kind of like me. He's kind of bald and got a big white whiskers and everything all over his face. Marty Verrill, 59-year-old kidney transplant parent recipient in Ohio, should have been near the top of the list to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Yet, like millions of others, he wasn't having any luck scheduling an appointment. Marty and his wife, Nancy Verrill, would sit with computers in their labs trying for hours to book an appointment on different sites, all of which were slow and convoluted. I felt hopeless, Nancy says. Then Nancy heard about Marla Zwinging, a 40-year-old mom of three from a Cleveland suburb who was spending up to 10 hours a day online trying to secure appointments for vulnerable individuals. So Nancy messaged Zwinging on Facebook. Can you help? 25 minutes later, Zwinging responded by asking for Marty's legal name, date of birth, and other information. 9 minutes after that, Zwinging reported back. Marty had an appointment to get the vaccine. Zwinging's vaccine honey started on February 1st, when she learned that her parents, her father has leukemia and her mother has a breast cancer survivor with a heart condition, weren't able to get appointments themselves. She hated they had to wait. Clicking around on vaccine registration sites, Zwinging, who has helped her husband develop websites, discovered just how difficult it was to book an appointment. It was like trying to get a World Series ticket, she says. She applied strategies that web insiders are familiar with, keeping multiple browsers open, refreshing sites every 20 seconds, erasing cookies, and added a few of her special skills. I'm tenacious. I drink a lot of coffee, and I'm a fast typer, she says. Soon enough, Zwinging had to, by the way, that's spelled S-W-I-N-G-G-I, interesting name, had secured appointments for both of her parents. I felt like a rock star. Zwinging decided that helping others would be her way of giving back. I feel like I need to will us out of this pandemic, she says. On February 10th, she logged into Facebook to let people know that she was assisting with bookings. By March 2nd, she took appointments for 400 people, a feat that made Nancy conclude, Marla is some sort of a COVID angel. Well, I apologize. I think I may have read that last week. Sorry about that. Anyway, let's get to what I know I haven't read. You know, what I have to do when I don't completely finish something, sometimes I have to exit out in my book. And then I sometimes forget to do that. I apologize for that. Your true stories in 100 words. Merit badge and manners. While spending the day at Mount Rushmore, I decided to get lunch from a stand being worked by Boy Scouts. The three hot dogs I ordered cost $4 each, and I also put beverage for $7. That'll be $10, said the young scout, ringing up my order. Recognize his math error, I said, you might try that again, son. He replied, that'll be $10, please. Jim Roller, my son Zeta. Mommy's little girl, priceless. Many years ago, my two sons spent time coaching their toddler sister to say something special to me on Mother's Day. They had been teaching her, you are priceless. Certain that she had the words lined up right, they watched peeking out from behind their door as their little sister made her way down the hall. She called out to me and then proudly announced, "Mommy, you are worthless." Ellen Zimmerman, Elkhart, Indiana. Nothing slows her down. When I first met my friend Muriel, she walked with a limp, polio. As she grew older, Muriel moved to using a walker and then a scooter. Undaunted, she purchased a huge fan outfitted with a ramp. Tiny but mighty, now 96, Muriel is a daredevil driver. Once when I was in the van with her, a cop pulled Muriel over. "You know you were speeding," he said. "Yes," she replied, "and I slowed down just before you nabbed me." The cop let Muriel go, but heard her say to me, "No ticket, yay!" Amy Greenberg, Stanford, Connecticut. We found a fix. 5 tricks to improve your life. 1. Rejuvenate strawberries that go soft. With strawberry season almost upon us. Try this if yours turn a bit mushy before you get a chance to finish them. Move them to a large bowl, taking care not to mash any, and leaving an inch between the berries and the bowl's rim. Cover with ice and pour cool water over the top so the ice is floating. After 20 minutes, the strawberries will have a plumper shape and a lighter color. This trick works for wilted lettuce, too. Keep your plants safe in the car. Gardening. When you head to the nursery this spring, don't forget the stepladder, not for climbing, but to secure your plant hall. Lay the ladder in the trunk and place your most top-heavy or fragile plants in the steps in the spaces between the rungs to hold them upright. No more spilled soil on the carpet or driving home with a peace lily in your lap. 3. Buckle in your wine glasses, too. Cleaning. No matter how strategically you play dishwater Tetris, your more oddly shaped glassesware, wine glasses, champagne, flutes, sometimes doesn't sit quite right in the rack. Prevent breakage and worry by stretching a rubber band around the body of the glass and over the rack spokes during a turbulent war circle. Now that's a fix worth toasting. 4. Unmute yourself with a simple keystroke. Tech. Zoom errors can happen to the best of us. Try to unmute yourself during a work meeting or a family video call, but instead you turn off your camera or accidentally disconnect the call entirely. But Zoom is pretty smart. It will mute you with a simple press of the space bar. Ready to be unmuted? Press the space bar again. Oh, that's good. I didn't know that. BYOB. Be your own bandage. Health. You already know the quickest way to heal the bothersome paper cut is to cover it. But what are you supposed to do when it's in a tricky spot and the webbing between two fingers? Crack open the trusty first aid kit and buddy tape the two fingers together for a day. This will help prevent germs from getting in and the cut from stretching wider. How about a little humor in uniform? My mom was ex-Army, so during the holidays, she and Dad would invite local Marines from Camp Pendleton over for dinner. One night, my sister came home from work at Kentucky Fried Chicken, still in her uniform. One of the Marines asked where she'd been. "I'm to visit the Colonel," my sister joked. The Marine looked confused. "Colonel Sanders," she explained. "Sorry, ma'am," he said. "I don't know those higher-ups." Chief Chiales, Corona, California. A young airman showed up at the formation needing a shave. When I asked why he hadn't taken care of that before he arrived, he complained, "Somebody moved my piano." "Why would the piano cause you to miss shaving?" I asked. His reply, "My razor was on the piano." Robert Rhodes, Fallon, Nevada. The food on your plate. I am rice, a perfect staple made better. Sometime in the 1960s, a group of Japanese businessmen from Hitachi Corporation ventured to rural Louisiana to learn what was driving the remarkable self of a Chimomatic rice cooker in the town of Ville Platte. They toured the Louisiana countryside, taking in expanses of rice field that might have reminded them of home. They also discovered Cajun music producer Floyd Soyeau, owner of the legendary Floyd's Record Shop, who was so convinced of the Chimomatic's ability to mail beautiful rice for the Cajun kitchen that he was settling in alongside the tunes and greats like D.L. Menard. In solving one mystery, the Hitachi men were confirming that America had discovered the answer to another. How can you cook a bowl of perfect rice over and over? Sure, a human can learn how, as you have done for centuries around the earth, by employing the same dedicated metal earthenware pot set on the same time-worn hearth every time. But after just a couple of variables, and the perfect grains you seek are not remotely guaranteed, the margin of error between undercooking me and overcooking me is simply too narrow. For Louisiana cooks of jambalaya, étouffée, and gumbo, and soon enough American cooks everywhere, the rice cooker delivered total control over me. Even the most basic model is a marvel, relying on an ingenious set of temperature sensors and carefully crafted magnetic alloys attuned to the boiling point of water. Once I absorb the last drop of water, the temperature shoots up past the boiling point, and the magnets disengage, turning off the cooker for a perfect pot of me every time. No wonder the rice cooker today is nearly ubiquitous worldwide as the microwave. Grab a bowl of me at the corner Chinese restaurant, and it surely came from a rice cooker. I don't mind. I'm always put at ease when I realize I am being dumped into one and can merge as my best cook self. Now you understand why that Hitachi on sale for $17.95 was flying off the shelf at Floyd's. Still, even when you humans had to toil in ancient kitchens to master me, I was always your most consumed food, and still am, underpinning daily meals from Brazil to Brunei. You loved me so much you domesticated my grass 3 separate times on 3 separate continents. In China, about 10,000 years ago, in what's now known as Brazil about 4,000 years ago, and in West Africa about 3,000 years ago. The species from Africa and Brazil have mostly fallen by the wayside, but the one domesticated in China, Orza sativa, is still going strong. That's no surprise given my versatility in both kitchen and field. As a crop, while rice paddies may come first to mind, I don't require a flooded pound's worth of hydration to grow. I actually thrive in dry landscapes, too. Because I tolerate being submerged, farmers can use water as a natural weed and pest control. In the kitchen, I boast a dizzying array of varieties. Carolina, RBO, basmati, jasmine, black, red, white, brown, etc., etc. I will leave out wild rice because it's the grain of another type of grass, not mine. Keep one basic distinction in mind, though. The difference between my long-grain Indica and shorter-grain Japonica subspecies. I get a kick out of cooks who believe them interchangeable. Nope. Imagine using Indica's slender grain, so perfect for pilafs, biryani, and omsad in order of general sows for sushi. I can just see the bits of dry rice draining from the seaweed. Or try serving up a jambalaya packed with stout, moist Japonica. It'd be so sludgy you'd get a lifetime ban from Mardi Gras. When I'm brown, that's my whole grain form of any of the above, with bran still attached, which means I can pack a better nutrient fiber payload, perhaps not the traditional pairing with Chinese takeout, but a heart healthier choice nonetheless. Of course, I'm also milled into flour to make fry batters, noodles, and spring roll wrappers, and I'm key ingredient in sake and soybean paste such as miso. If you've even used me as a currency over the years, it's when you turn me to represent fertility and prosperity, including tossing me at American newlyweds, that I must balk. Please don't waste me like that. Perhaps a better tradition would be gifting the happy couple a shiny new rice cooker. Classic creamy rice pudding. Yum, that looks good. In a 3-quart saucepan, combine 3/4 cups whole milk with 1/2 cup uncooked long-grain rice and a pinch of salt. Add the whole spices of your choice. 4 cardamom pods, a cinnamon stick, or a split and scraped vanilla bean pod and its seeds. Bring to a simmer over high heat, stirring and scraping the sides and bottom frequently with a silicone spatula to prevent scorching. Lower the heat to maintain a bare simmer and cook, stirring often until rice is soft and liquid has taken on a thick, creamy consistency, about 40 minutes. Discard the whole spices. Stir in 1/2 cup sugar until dissolved. Serve warm or chilled. When chilled, the pudding will thicken considerably. Stir in milk a tablespoon at a time until the desired consistency is reached. Our thing of 13 things. Saluting Arlington Cemetery. And there's an illustration of a soldier marching with a rifle on his shoulder, although I hate to say it, the rifle's upside down, and American flags. Number one. 3 million people visit Arlington National Cemetery each year to honor the 400,000 veterans and their dependents who were interred, and earned or memorialized within its 639 acres. Arlington has the distinction of being the only national cemetery with service members from every major U.S. war and conflict. Number two, the property belonged to George Washington Park Custis, who was both the adopted grandson of our first president and the father-in-law of Robert E. Lee. His daughter, Mary Custis Lee, inherited the land, but when the Civil War broke out in 1861, the Lees abandoned their Arlington estate. The U.S. Army seized it to help defend the capital, then buried the Norse war dead there as a further insult to the Lee family. Number three, those early burials were racially integrated. But once Arlington became a national cemetery in 1864, All subsequent graves were segregated by race until Harry Truman desegregated the military in 1948. Number four, all presidents can be buried in Arlington, and only two are, William Taft and John F. Kennedy. Abraham Lincoln's son Robert is also in Arlington, despite his wishes to be buried alongside his father in Springfield, Illinois. Robert's wife arranged his services and chose Arlington. Number five, even though the cemetery conducts up to 30 funerals a day, Arlington isn't keeping up with demand. Officials give priority to active service members over veterans and to military members and family over family members. The wait list is so long that months can pass between death and a funeral. Number six, Arlington does not charge for funeral services or for graves and their maintenance. The U.S. government also foots the bill for the white marble headstones that dot the landscape. Just before Memorial Day, soldiers place flags in front of the more than 200,000 headstones, as well as the urn niches. Number seven, in addition to service members, there are war correspondents, chaplains, and military doctors, such as yellow fever pathologist Walter Reed, laid to rest at Arlington as well. And since the Geneva Convention mandates that prisoners of war who die in captivity be honorably buried, the cemetery is also home to one German and two Italian POWs from World War II. Number eight, among those buried at Arlington are boxer Joe Louis, an Army vet, actor Lee Marvin, a former Marine, and the architect of Washington, D.C., Pierre-Charles L'Enfant, who joined the American Revolution. Glenn Miller, whose Army Air Force band entertained more than a million troops, has a memorial, since he is still missing in action. Number nine. In 2013, Arlington launched a free mobile and web app, ANC Explorer. The tool allows users to locate any grave at the cemetery and view burial records as well as photos of the headstones and memorials. The app provides direction to each one. Number 10. More than 2,000 soldiers lie within the Tomb of the Civil War Unknowns. Inside the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, there are just three, one from each World War and another from the Korean War. An unknown Vietnam vet had been there as well, but a DNA test in 1998 revealed the soldier's identity as Air Force First Lieutenant Michael Joseph Blasey. Blasey was exhumed and reinterred in his home state of Missouri at his family's request. Number 11. The guards of the Tomb Unknown Soldier are also called Sentinels. The guard on duty marches 21 steps down the mat behind the sarcophagus, waits 21 seconds, then turns and waits another 21 seconds before taking 21 steps back. This routine represents the highest symbolic military honor, the 21-gun salute. Number 12, two of the memorials at Arlington are dedicated to astronauts. Months after Space Shuttle Challenger exploded in 1986, the commingled remains of all seven crew members were buried there. The Columbia Memorial is dedicated to the seven astronauts lost when that space shuttle exploded in 2003. Number 13. The cemetery is running out of room. About 95,000 burial spaces remain, but 22 million living armed forces members are currently eligible for them. Proposed restrictions to the rules of eligibility will surely limit who can be buried there. Far fewer retired vets, for instance, but they will allow for continual burials for the next 150 years. And actually, I can be buried there since I'm a Purple Heart recipient. As a matter of fact, I have instructed my daughter and my son-in-law, who was a former Marine, that that's what I would like to be cremated and placed there. Frederick Douglass was the most photographed man of his time, reportedly photographed more than Abraham Lincoln. But there's one thing you almost never see in Douglass's photos, a smile. The famous American abolitionists believed that smiling would play into the 19th century stereotypes of black people as cartoon-like objects of ridicule. Of the 160 known portraits of Douglass, he's smiling in only one, which shows him with his wife and sister-in-law. How about some laugh lines? And they've got a typewriter next to a tablet, next to a handheld computer. Blast from the past. Do you think the Great Depression... they were like, ugh, 1933, am I right? Wonder how many medieval chefs were executed because the king food taster had food allergies. That's funny. The saddest part of medieval times is the horses think it's all real. I don't quite get that one. Accidentally closed a browser with 20-plus tabs open. This must be what the scholars of Alexandria felt when their great library burned. The Greeks believed their gods lived atop a very hikeable mountain, but no one went on to check. Just got an email from a student where they referred to the 90s as the late 1900s. Oh, God, does that make me feel old. And the next article is Best Pet Pals, Hair Raising Rescue. And there's a picture of a doggie named Jeannie and Chad, the long-eared bunny, together in the grass. Chad is an English lap bunny. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Chad is an English lap bunny who believes he is a dog. He eats from dog balls, sleeps in the dog's bed, follows around the backyard like a dog. Naturally, his best friend is our dog, Jeannie. We actually have four rabbits. Funny enough, Jeannie loves to chase after wild rabbits and will pull until the leash is taut if he sees one on the walk. But she never chases ours, and Chad has always been her favorite. When we let them out in the yard together, they each do their own thing at first. Jeannie wanders and sniffs around while Chad munches on grass. But eventually Jeannie will come back to find a spot in the shade, and Chad will come lie next to her and be greeted with a sloppy kiss. All four of our bunnies participate in a Read to Rabbits program at a nearby education center for migrant children. Kids who usually don't want to read can't wait to sit down with the bunnies to read them a story. One boy with special needs, who rarely speaks, said his first full sentence to one of our bunnies. At the end of every school year, Jenny joins her bunnies at Read to Rabbits, sporting her own pair of bunny ears. On one occasion, Chad and Jenny's friendship had life-saving consequences. Chad was hopping around the grass in the backyard one afternoon when my parents visited with their dog, Bradley. Since Chad's best friend is a dog, he had no fear hopping over to the 68-pound Bradley to say hello. But Bradley responded by grabbing the 10-pound bunny by the face, shaking him. Jenny bolted across the road and chased Bradley away. By the time we got to Chad, he was lying on the grass with blood gushing from his mouth. We rushed our beloved bunny to the vet. Chad had a broken jaw and a low chance of survival. We administered antibiotics and fed him through a syringe for weeks, hoping he would recuperate. Jenny was his vigilant companion the entire time. She sat next to us and wagged her tail while we sat down with Chad to feed him. It took weeks for him to eat solid food, but he did eventually recover fully, with Jeannie by his side. She was always protective and, oh, so gentle. You have a pet pal's tale? Enter your story and visuals and see terms at rd.com/petpals. Nominees may have printed in print and online. And there's a picture of the dog is a mixed breed, brown, light brown, almost tan dog, and the bunny is white and brown. And just as, you just want to pick them both up and cuddle them. It's a big bunny, though. Most popular man in Houston. When the power went off and the cold came on and the pipes burst in Texas in February, one man found himself in demand in ways he's never experienced before. The local plumber. My hero! Laura Ratliff squealed when Tony Watts arrived at her house to fix the broken pipes that had left her without water for days. Watts, 49, is used to rescuing people in their dankest moments, but the scale of the Texas disaster transformed into something more than a hired wrench. Most of what I do is repairing plumbing stuff, and there's a lot of me being their shoulders to cry on, he says. I try not to get emotionally involved. I can't let them see me like that. I'm there to help them feel better. That's why I love my job. I'm helping people. There's a lot of relief in just taking a shower in your own home. And with that, we're going to switch over to the consumer reports. So last week, we talked about cleaning secrets for every room, and we ended up with germ warfare. And then we have a little thing about keeping filters debris-free. The challenge. Filters may be all too easy to overlook, but dirty ones can affect a device's performance. With vacuums, for instance, especially bagless models, a blocked filter may reduce suction or spew dust back into the air. The top tools. Vacuum, running water, dish soap, new filters as needed. Dirt busters. For air conditioners, air purifiers, dehumidifiers, and vacuums, you can use the hand wash filters with water and mild soap, letting them dry fully before reinserting. Excuse me. Wash window air conditioner filters monthly during times of heavy use. Replace disposable HVAC system filters every 1 to 3 months. Washable filters have performed poorly in CR tests. For air purifiers, follow the owner's manual. Filter replacement intervals vary widely. Wash your dehumidifier filter a few times a month when humidity is high, and buy a new one if you spot mildew or mold. Follow your owner's manual for vacuum filters because the advice varies depending on the model. For water filters and refrigerator filters, which help remove lead and other contaminants from household water, check your owner's manual for washing and replacement schedules. Given your manual clean dishwater filter found in most modern models, a weekly sniff test, and if it's unpleasant, rinse the filter in your sink. If you have an over-the-range microwave, periodically move the mesh filter from underside of the appliance, soak it in soap and water, and rinse and let dry thoroughly. and pop it back in. Cooking a lot? Do this at least monthly to get rid of the grease from the range below. Germ warfare. HEPA filters for air purifiers can capture respiratory particles that carry most airborne viruses, including the coronavirus and bacteria. Joseph Allen, DSC, an associate professor of exposure assessment science at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, recommends painting a portable purifier in the bedroom of a household member with COVID-19. But take care changing the filter and cleaning device. Wear gloves and a mask and take the entire machine outside. Clean and wipe the exterior with a disinfectant, then remove the filter and dispose of it in a sealed bag. If your air purifier has a fabric pre-filter, an additional way to trap particles, wash it. Make busy bathrooms sparkle. The challenge. Soap, scum, and mildew in around the tub and shower, and persistent stains in the toilet. Top tools. Bathroom cleaner. This usually contains non-chlorine butch. Clean sponge, disinfectant or bleach, powder, cleanser, old toothbrush, or a toilet brush. Dirt busters. Crack a window or run an exhaust fan during and after the showers, and wipe down the tile walls and porcelain afterwards to help prevent the moisture buildup that can lead to mildew. But if you already got mildew or soap scum, spray on a solution of one part bleach to four parts of water and let sit for 30 minutes. Wipe with a sponge and finish with a water rinse. For hard-to-clean areas like shower door tracks, an old toothbrush can work magic. Dampen the bristles and brush away muck. Dipped in diluted bleach, that toothbrush can do also wonders on discolored grout. For the toilet, brush the bowl weekly with a disinfectant cleanser to help remove minor stains and reddish-brown hard water deposits. For hard water spots that persist, a calcium, lime, and rust remover such as CLR could leave the bowl sparkling. Clean it with monthly to help prevent stains from reappearing. Germ warfare. Wiping bathroom surfaces with a soapy sponge should eliminate most germs. But someone at home has been diagnosed with COVID-19. It's wise to clean and disinfect the bathroom and other shared surfaces, Allen says. For large surfaces, use a non-alcohol disinfectant, one that's bleach or hydrogen basis. Alcohol-based products are useful for disinfecting small objects, but may dry before they can reach full effectiveness on large surfaces, notes Gregory Shank, MD, an infectious disease specialist at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. For toilets, the handle is the main part to focus on, but to consider less obvious areas like around the toilet seat and the lid that might get touched a lot too. Tackle high traffic floors. The challenge. All that household dirt and dust we're getting, generating these days, typically ends up on floors and carpets, as well as hard to reach ceiling fans. Top tools. Vacuum, pillowcases, or ceiling fan duster, dust rags, carpet cleaner, and a steam mop. Dirt busters. Do household dusting first, including ceiling fans, Samsoni says, so the dust and dirt doesn't fall on a freshly vacuumed floor. And make sure that vacuum devices are working well by regularly emptying their bins and cleaning filters as recommended. What to use? For bare floors, a stick vac may be all you need, says Frank Reese, who conducts Consumer Reports vacuum tests. For carpets, CR tests have found that because uprights are the best because the weight of the device sits atop the brush head, pushing it down into the pile or so sucks up more debris. Cut stains? A carpet cleaner, hardware stores rent them, can remove the grime even the best vacuums can't get out. Steam mops are ideal for deep cleaning, laminate tile, and vinyl floors, but they can damage wood. With wood, different stains call for different solutions. For instance, scuff marks on wood floors sealed with urethane or polyurethane may give way if rubbed with a tennis ball or clean eraser. For those dusty ceiling fan blades, simply stick a pillowcase over one blade at a time and then pull it in the dust right off. Wiper blades and housing with a damp cloth and all-purpose cleaner. Dry everything thoroughly. Damp blades do attract dust. Germ warfare. If germs are a concern, say someone has vomited on the floor or carpeting, it's best to look the manufacturer's advice on disinfectant use before dabbing some of the area. That said, a diluted solution of bleach and water is generally safe for laminate or vinyl, according to Bill Carroll, Ph.D., an adjunct professor of chemistry at Indiana University. A disinfectant product with quaternary ammonium, such as Lysol, should be safe for wood floors, but test it first in an inconspicuous spot first. Wipe the area with a damp cloth afterward and dry thoroughly. Otherwise, the disinfectant may leave residue behind. Clean your exercise equipment. After every workout, go over your machine surface with a damp, soft cloth and a mild, soapy water. Don't pour liquid cleaners on it. That may damage the electronics inside. Clean hand weights the same way, then wipe them dry. Step 2. Sharing workout equipment with others in your household? Clean the handles and others' high-touch surfaces with a disinfectant wipe between uses. Step 3. To reduce dust buildup from around the motors of treadmills and other mechanical items, occasionally unplug the machine, move the motor cover, your owner's manual can help you find it, and vacuum the visible debris. Freshen your washer and dryer. The challenge. Wrangling soap, scum, and the moisture that can lead to mold growth along with the unpleasant smell that often occurs with front-loading washers. For dryers, it's curbing lint, which can be a fire hazard, slow drying, and high utility bills. The top tools, once again, are bleach, cotton ball, rubbing alcohol, duct link brush. Dirt busters. To make your washer less mold-friendly, move washcloth into the dryer right away and leave the door and detergent dispenser slightly ajar between the loads, as long as the kids and pets can't get to it. Use the right type and amount of detergent to minimize residue like soap scum. Some are too sudsy for high-efficiency washers like front loaders, so choose those labeled HE or for all washers. And while it may seem odd to wash a washing machine, run the tub clean or sanitize cycle, or simply a hot water cycle with a washer cleaner containing bleach, regularly. Some brands say monthly or at least every 50 loads, to help keep it odor-free and performing well. For the dryer, clean the lint filter after every load. Reduce the risk of fire caused by lint buildup. Periodically remove lint from the duct in the back of the appliance. If you have access to the dryer vent outside your home, check it while you're drying a load. You should feel air coming out. If you don't, you need to disconnect the duct from the dryer and clean it out, or if you call a professional to clean it for you. If your dryer has moisture sensors, which shut off the appliance often the clothes are dry, keep them working well by cleaning them with a cotton ball dampened with rubbing alcohol every few months or any time the auto-dry cycle seems to be malfunctioning. Germ warfare. If a whole household member has COVID-19 or another infectious illness, washing their laundry in the hottest water it can withstand should kill most pathogens. If someone has had diarrhea, add regular bleach, not color safe, if it's appropriate, to the clothes. Sanitize your tech tools. The challenge. You want to clean items like keyboards and remotes, TVs and phones without damaging them. Top tools, alcohol wipes, cotton balls, disinfectant wipes, microfiber cloths, soap, soft cotton cloths, toothpicks, or an old toothbrush. Swab your keyboard and mouse with a mix of water and a bit of alcohol to get rid of crumbs between keys. If you don't have a handheld vacuum handy, try a small brush or a sticky end of a Post-it. Turning the keyboard upside down and giving it a shake also helps. For a remote, remove the batteries, turn it upside down, and tap it against your palm to remove dust and dirt in the keys. A dry toothbrush or a wooden toothpick helps to lodge stubborn debris. Spray a soft cloth with water and alcohol solution and wipe the remote, then clean around the keys with a cotton ball damaged with water-alcohol mix. Dry with another soft cloth. TV screen need dusting? John Walsh, who cleans more than 250 televisions each year in CR's labs, recommends it wiping in a circular motion with a soft anti-static microfiber cloth. Never use glass cleaner, which can damage today's OLED and LCD models. With smartphones, James Dickerson's PhD CR Chief Scientific Officer washes occasion screen protector after removing them natch and a sink with soap and water. For the phone itself, go over hard, non-porous surfaces like display and keyboard with an isopropyl alcohol or other disinfecting wipe. Germ warfare. Electronic devices don't need regular disinfecting, and you're already sanitizing smartphones with the wipe mentioned above. But if someone at home does have COVID-19 or another infectious illness, you might consider disinfecting commonly used electronics, especially if that person is not able to remain isolated, says Gregory Schrank, MD, an infectious disease specialist at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. There's no need to disinfect your smartphone when you return it home after going out unless someone who is sick handled it. Cleaning after COVID-19. You may think it's essential to disinfect your home from top to bottom if some of them are recently recovered from COVID-19, but experts suggest a moderate approach. The virus doesn't survive either in the air or on surfaces for a long period of time, says Bill Carroll, a PhD chemist at the Indiana University. Cleaning surfaces with just soap and water may be enough, he says, but you may want to ensure you're eradicating lingering germs with the following steps. You're just adding an extra layer of safety with these, he said. Air things out. By far, the most common mode of exposure to this virus is through inhaling droplets or aerosols in the air, Carroll says. So leave the windows in the bathroom and bedroom the ill person has been using open for 12 hours. Clean and disinfect, put on disposable gloves and clean surfaces like bathroom counters with soap and water. Then wipe with a coronavirus-killing disinfectant. Launder sick room items. Wearing disposable gloves, collect bedding, clothes, towels, and the old person has used and wash them at the hottest setting following the family master's instructions. You can wash them with items from other household members. You can wash them with other items from household members. How about getting a lush lawn without pesticides? The truth about the chemicals that keep your lawn green and how to create a lengthy oasis without them. Shortly after Lydia Chambers had her first child in 1995, her family moved to a new home in Ohio. It was this neighborhood with perfect lawns, recalled Chambers, now 60. In her previous home, when a swath of dandelions appeared shortly after her husband moved in, she spent 2 weeks pulling them out by hand. In their Ohio home, however, she had no time to take care of the yard, so she hired a service to come and treat it. At the time, she didn't realize that the chemicals the service used might be dangerous. Even though I kind of sensed it, I just didn't know, she says. In her professional life as a hydrologist, Chambers was beginning to learn about how long-term low-dose exposure to dangerous chemicals could lead to cancer and other chronic diseases. This made her increasingly suspicious of the pesticides her landscaping company applied. By 2005, her family had moved to a New Jersey, and her elementary school-age kids were playing in the yard constantly. As she did more research, she learned a particularly disturbing fact. One common weed killer, 2,4-dichlorooxid acetic acid, 2,4-D, was also an ingredient in Agent Orange, a chemical used during the Vietnam War, of which I have, unfortunately, intimate knowledge of. I guess if anything flipped a switch, it was that, she says. Chambers and her husband finally committed to taking care of the yard with no synthetic pesticides, herbicides, or fertilizers, even if that meant it sprouted a few weeds. I was proud that I had a few weeds in my grass, she said. It was a symbol I was doing the right thing. For many Americans, however, pristine lawn is the goal, and weed-free grass is a big business. American consumers spend about $35 billion per year on lawn and garden products, according to a market research firm, Mintel. Professional lawn care services and consumers going the do-it-yourself route choose from a variety of pesticides and fertilizers, many with familiar brand names such as Roundup and Scotts. The sense of unease that Chambers felt about pesticides is grounded in evidence. A growing body of research has linked many of them, even at low levels, to potential health problems such as cardiovascular disease, says Consumer Reports senior scientist Michael Hansen, Ph.D., an expert in environmental health. Also, while synthetic lawn care products may be helpful to your yard in the short term, they can harm beneficial organisms in the soil and won't lead to a healthy ecosystem in the long run. You wonder, says Jay Felbert, executive director of Beyond Pesticides, a nonprofit that advocates for transitioning away from synthetic pesticides, why are we still using these things? Part of the problem is that even when consumers look for alternatives to traditional lawn chemicals, navigating the marketplace can be tricky. Unlike with food, there's no legal definition of organic when it comes to lawn products, so it's hard to assess the safety of a product that advertises itself as organic, natural, or environmentally friendly. Still, it's possible for consumers to move away from conventional lawn care. It just requires a bit of strategy, a few new habits, and some fresh ideas about what your yard should look like. On one hand, it's a minority of lawn owners who hire lawn care companies to add fertilizer or pesticides to their lawns. On a February 2021 CR nationally representative survey of 1,772 lawn owners, 51% said they don't use any pesticides or fertilizers on their lawns. And according to Greta Groffman, Ph.D., a professor at the Advanced Science Research Center at City University of New York's Graduate Center, who studies ecosystem ecology, the biggest group of homeowners are what we call passive land managers. They just mow. Still, many American homeowners strive for a perfectly uniform, bright green lawns. And according to research by Paul Robbins, Ph.D., professor and dean at Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, many do this in spite of misgivings about the sometimes mysterious chemical inputs involved. Lawn chemicals pose short and long-term risk to health, and children are particularly vulnerable. Kids can actually ingest pesticides if they get their hands on them. Although acute poisoning are relatively rare, Poison Control Center still logged around 34,000 cases regarding pesticide exposure among children 5 and younger in 2019, according to the American Association of Poison Control Centers. The long-term risk of chronic exposure to chemicals in our lawns are much harder to quantify than acute poisonings, but plenty of research has been conducted into how it may affect health. One thing we know, lawn chemicals don't just stay on the lawn. Research has demonstrated that pesticides can be tracked inside on shoes and clothes, where they then settle into dust on floors and other surfaces. Their children, especially young ones who crawl around on the ground and explore the world by putting things in their mouths, are more likely to get these substances into their system. The prenatal period and early childhood are also times when people are more vulnerable to the risk of these repeated tiny exposures, which may have long-term effects, says Sheila Sethi Yanara Yanara, M.D., a pediatrician and environmental epidemiologist at the University of Washington and the Seattle Children's Research Center. Still, the specific health effects of cumulative exposure to individual pesticides are difficult to tease out, in part because pesticides are designed to be toxic to living organisms. Scientists don't typically expose people to them on purpose to find out what happens, as they do with medications. The evidence we do have, based on observational studies and experiments in animals and in cells, is open to interpretation. Take, for example, the herbicide 2,4-D and glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup. They were the two most common active ingredients found in home and garden pesticides used in 2012, the last year for which data on national pesticide usage was available from the Environmental Protection Agency. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, part of the World Health Organization that investigates the causes of cancers in humans, classifies 2,4-D as a possible carcinogen and glyphosate as a probable carcinogen. Still, the science isn't perfectly clear. The IARC's classification of carcinogens only contains the strength of evidence showing a given substance linked to cancer. But chemicals in the same category could pose very different levels of real-world risk. Bayer, glyphosate's manufacturer, told CR that the IARC's analysis of carcinogens does not reflect real-world exposure, meaning the agency doesn't say whether the amount of substance you would typically be exposed to is enough to be dangerous. The EPA has ruled that there isn't good enough evidence to say whether 2,4-D causes cancer in humans, and glyphosate probably doesn't. The EPA also says that although 2,4-D was indeed an ingredient in Agent Orange, it was a different component known as dioxin that was found to cause cancer. And Lindsay Tawson, executive director of the Industry Task Force 2 on 2,4-D research data, told CR that regulators have consistently found 2,4-D not to have an adverse human health impacts when used as directed on the label. A study of a variety of studies, particularly among agricultural communities exposed to pesticides through their work or by proximity to farms, have linked these and other common lawn chemicals to increased risk of other health problems too. These include neurological issues, respiratory irritation, asthma, liver and kidney damage. One 2015 study even suggests that both 2,4-D and glyphosate can be contributing to the development of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. What's more, several common lawn pesticides are suspected endocrine disruptors, which meaning they might interfere with the body's hormones. This is thought to occur at very low doses during certain vulnerable phases of life, such as the prenatal period and early childhood. Endocrine disruption may continue to a range of issues, including diabetes and reproductive and developmental problems. Still, industry groups maintain that the EPA's approval of existing lawn pesticides means chemicals should be safe to use as directed on the label. Responsible Industry for a Sound Environment, an association representing pesticide and fertilizer industry players, says the EPA reviews hundreds of studies to arrive at its approval of a pesticide. And Andrew Bray, Vice President of Government Relations for the National Association of Landscape Professionals, says, "We'll look at EPA as the experts." The limits of regulation. It can be hard for consumers to know what makes all of this, especially when studies come to contrasting conclusions. After all, if these chemicals pose a real danger, why would they still be on store shelves? In fact, David Dorman, Ph.D., a professor of conductology of North Carolina's College of Veterinary Medicine in Raleigh, North Carolina, actually I know him, says many dangerous products have been banned in the U.S., including DDT. Modern pesticides, he says, are so much safer than what we used even 40 or 50 years ago. But progress has been made. In theory, the EPA's approach to regulating pesticides is precautionary. It requires manufacturers to demonstrate a chemical safety before bringing it to market. But many consumer advocates, including CR's Hansen, says the EPA's testing requirements are outdated and don't reflect the latest in toxicological science. That allows some significant harms of pesticides to go undetected. The problem, says Laura Vandenberg, Ph.D., Associate Professor of Environmental Health Sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, is that a clear understanding of some of the most serious potential effects, such as cancer, may take decades to emerge. In that time, millions of people have already been exposed unnecessarily, she says. The EPA told CR that it is in the process of incorporating endocrine disruption into its standard test for pesticides safely, and is implementing a new set of evaluation methods designed to reduce the need for animal testing. The agency says that risk assessment ensures that when a pesticide is used according to the label, people and environment are adequately protected. Lawn chemicals don't just stay on your lawn or end up in your household dust. They can also seep deep into the soil, float off into the air, and be carried off by stormwater, ultimately causing harm to a range of organisms they were never meant to target. A major component in conventional lawn care, fertilizer, is a key source of water pollution. The excess nutrients get washed out by rain into local waterways or sink into the groundwater. Once nitrogen and phosphorus from fertilizer reach a lake or pond, they can prompt an overgrowth of algae, which eat up the oxygen in the water. That can cause fish to die en masse and sometimes make water toxic. Synthetic fertilizers and pesticides may also gradually degrade the health of your soil by diminishing beneficial microbes and fungi. Healthy soil, along with being great for your grass, can help keep carbon out of the atmosphere, an important bulwark against climate change, says soil scientist Asmaret Perhey, PhD, professor of soil-backed biogeochemistry at the University of California, Merced. If you're concerned about the potential health and environmental effects of synthetic lawn chemicals, you might think the answer is choosing organic chemicals instead of employing a green lawn care service, but that can be harder than it sounds. For agricultural, the federal government enforces regulations for food producers that would like to label their food as organic, but no federal laws exist for organic lawn care products or service providers. Before you hire a provider advertising organic lawn care, ask plenty of questions, says Michelle Bacax, associate professor and county agent with the Rutgers Cooperative Extension in New Jersey. If the first thing the landscaper talks to you about is the type of product that they're using, well, that may be a little bit of a warning sign, she said. Instead, look for a provider that offers a soil test that talks to you about improving the health of your soil, putting the right plant in the right place for your yard, and using several types of turf grass. These are the signs of a provider interested in the unique ecology of your yard. Although uncertainty remains about the extent of harms of lawn products, reducing risk to people and environment is easy. Avoid using synthetic lawn chemicals. There are other ways to achieve the same goals that are better for your lawn and for your family. It could take a bit of a mindset shift, says Joseph Hexman, Ph.D., an extension specialist and professor of soil science at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. If you want to have an organic lawn, you need to have a little bit of tolerance for something less than perfect, he says. Over the years, the practice of pesticide-free lawn care has evolved for Lydia Chambers and her husband. They still live in New Jersey, and Chambers now considers herself an environmental activist. Their latest effort, converting much of their three-acre property from lawn into meadow. Soon, in places of acre of trim turf, they'll have a spread of native wildflowers and grasses. The meadow will encourage a more diverse ecology in her lawn, she says, and there's a bonus. It will be way easier than handling more flower beds. Do eco-friendly lawn helpers actually work? If you're shooting for an environmentally friendly lawn and garden, you need a holistic approach, not just chemicals. Here's a guide to various alternatives to conventional lawn products. Fertilizers. Fertilizers generally release nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Organic types may contain plant or animal material, such as bone meal or manure. These must be broken down by soil bacteria and fungi, so they may work slowly but can improve soil health. As with conventional products, too much organic fertilizer can contribute to water pollution, so test your soil to find out which nutrients it needs. And in general, look for products with a seal from the Organic Materials Review Institute, OMRI. Organic alone doesn't mean much. Also, try leaving grass clippings on your lawn, which adds plenty of nutrients. Allow clover to flourish in your grass to provide nitrogen to the soil. Insecticides. These can include priethrin, neem oil, spinosad, and insecticidal soaps. While these do work, some may harm beneficial insects such as bees. They carry some risk of skin or eye irritation, so, as with conventional products, you should carefully follow all directions on the label. Also try welcoming natural enemies of pests, such as assassin bugs and spiders. Mowing grass higher and planting a variety of native plants will benefit natural enemies, says Shaku Nair, Ph.D., of the Arizona Pest Management Center. Herbicides. Common types include botanical oils, acetic acid, special soaps, and corn gluten meal. Generally, these don't eliminate weeds as completely as Roundup. Weeds could regrow, and acetic acid can be corrosive. Also, try hand weeding. Pulling weeds might seem like a drag, but it is free and effective, especially if you do it in the spring when the weeds are young, and it's good exercise, too. Want to rethink your yard? Try these easy strategies to produce the health of your lawn. Make it safe for your family and the environment. Keep in mind that the needs of lawn vary wisely depending on climate, sun exposure, types of soil and grass you have, and more. A cooperative extension service can provide plenty of advice tailored to your land. You can find services in your state at npic.orst.edu/mir.html. But these tips are a good start. Water wisely. Watering grass infrequently can help encourage deeper roots and help your lawn resist drought. Water only in the early morning. Water at night can promote fungal growth. Add a rain barrel to catch water that drains from your gutter and use the water for future irrigation. Plant native plants. Native plants are ideally adapted to the weather conditions and local pests of your area, so they require less water and maintenance. Plus, they'll attract birds and beneficial bugs. Shrink your lawn. Add flower beds, vegetable gardens, or to discourage ticks, wood chip bury between grass and wooded areas. If you have patches of grass that wear down because of foot traffic, replace them with a footpath. Test your soil. Before you add fertilizer or anything else to your soil, you need to know which nutrients it needs. You can send them soil to your local cooperative extension service, or they can test it for a small fee. Mow right. Cut your grass to 3 or 4 inches and keep the mower blade sharp. Taller grass is healthier, and its shade is inhospitable to weeds. Use the mower's mulching mode, which will cut the grass into fine clippings and deposit them back into the soil, says Dave Trezza, who oversees CR's lawn testing. And embrace diversity. Treat some weeds as welcome flowering weeds feed bees and other pollinators, and clover fertilizes your lawn. Young dandelion leaves can even be added to salads. And seed new grass. A resilient lawn contains more than one kind of grass. Adding seed, especially to bare sods, can help it grow densely. Ask your local extension about drought and pest-resistant gas varieties. How about we close with a quick life in these United States? My wife often surprises me with her unusual perspective on life, but never more so than when she walked outside one breezy afternoon, threw open her arms, and announced, "I love living on a planet with wind." Bill Spencer, Cullowhee, North Carolina. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.